This podcast is sponsored by Silicon Prairie Ventures, providing innovative software solutions for a diverse range of problems.
Gonna take a sentimental journey, gonna set my heart at ease.
Welcome to Footprints, a podcast series archiving family and community stories and making connections between the past and the future.
We are broadcasting live from the historic Irving Theater. It is Firehouse Irvington, and it's the second part of an interview that we're doing with Bob Nedelecki, a gentleman who literally is a sports legend in this town, was Mr. ABA, and has some specific insights about Bobby Slick Leonard. You want to talk about guys who were characters, a guy who shaped, I think, the Pacers, and then had an amazing career prior to his passing as a Pacers broadcaster. And perhaps, Bob, you may be the guy that knew him best and was closest to him.
You know, the broadcaster thing, I talked to him. He called me. I still have the voicemail when he left me the Sunday morning, and then I called him back the day before he passed. And we were just laughing. He was doing the game when he did it at home. He was doing the game that night. And I told him, I said, Slicko, I said, when are you going to just quit all that and just retire and have a good time? And he said, baby, he said, I'm going to ride that bus till they kick me off. I said, okay, sounds good. But he was one of a kind.
Now, when did Bobby Leonard become your coach? At what point?
Well, he did our first training camp. Was in the summer of 67, and he and Clyde LaVellet handled the training camp. And Slick basically, 200 or 300 guys slowed up, and I saw that look in Slick's eye, and he finally just started running everybody baselines, and half guys were throwing up and didn't know what they were doing there. And I think the next day only about 30 guys showed up. But he ran that camp that summer, and then I became friends with him, and through Jimmy Rail especially. And during the year, you know, he would come to games and sit down with him and have a few toddies and talk. And all that summer long, Slick kept saying, he said, you know, you guys are good. You got a lot of talent. You're just not playing together as a team, which we weren't. And he said, you just need direction. And Jimmy and I kept bugging him all summer. Said, why don't you coach? Why don't you coach? He said, no. Because he had a ring business. He was selling for Herff Jones, I think it was. And anyway, at the start of the next year, Larry Staverman, who was a nice guy, he just didn't know what he was doing. And they fired him after about the sixth game, and they brought Slick in as coach. And I remember the first day he comes in, he sits us all down. And again, I can't say what he said. Larry. He kind of told us the rules and everything, and especially as far as the racial part of the team was, he basically laid the law down. And one thing we left from there. So the funny part is about the third game we played in Minnesota, and we played. They had a referee, and I can remember his name, but he was a real jerk, and he was calling a bunch of pretty bad fouls. And finally, Slick stands up and screams at him. I remember he said, you call one more foul like that, I'm going to smack you in the mouth. Well, 2 seconds later, boom, foul. Slick takes off across the middle of the court. I just was panicking and takes a haymaker swing at the guy, the referee. So they threw him out of the game, and he's sitting up on the top and watching the game. And I guess about 2 days later, George Mikan, who was the commissioner back then, George Mikan sat down with him and Storn and said, well, we're probably going to have to fine you $1,000, Bob. And Slick looked at him and said, fine, here's a check. Let's go drink beer. Literally, that's the way it went. So that was the start. And he basically, he put the law to us. He didn't mess around. He was tough, but he was fair. And he even left Roger Brown home on a couple games because Roger was kind of dogging it. Now, here's Roger, one of the best players ever walked the planet. And he just left him home. And Roger kind of woke up a little bit and started playing harder. And it almost became the point where we played hard and we wanted to win for Slick. And it sounds crazy, a bunch of guys. I wonder today if guys making this all this huge money, really have that affection for their coach. And if they do, that's a great coach. I mean, you have to have the players want to play for you. So I think that. And then, of course, should I tell them about the Duluth?
Well, you should tell them that the real reason you guys played for Slick is because he gave you free beer at night.
He wanted to kill us, too. No, after about 2 or 3 months, we played in Minnesota, and they played a game up in Duluth, Minnesota, to show the team. And our locker room was an old hockey locker room. And we went out and we played. And I must admit, I dogged it a little bit in the first half. And we came in for the halftime talk. We all sat down. Slick started screaming. And then he looked at us, and then all of a sudden he looked up at the wall, and there was all these hockey sticks up there. So he grabbed one of the hockey sticks, and he looked at me, and he called me every name but Mom. He called me every name. I'm going to kill you, you son of a... And he pulls this thing. I took off running. I ran and got in the bathroom, and I locked the door in the bathroom. He chased me in the bathroom and is beating the hockey stick on the door, screaming he's going to kill me. And, of course, everybody thought it was funny. But the thing of it is, we won the game, and I think I scored 20 in the second half. So I played good. But that's what I always said. That was his motivational tool. And he did that on a lot of occasions. And I'll tell you what. I'm going to go ahead and tell you guys a story.
Well, sure. Kevin can
sure.
Take
care of it. Okay, we can beep it.
We're all adults here.
One day we lost about 3 games in a row, and Slick didn't like that. And sometimes on the way to the game, he would stop at a place called the Lamplighter. I don't know if you ever heard of it. It was over on 38th Street. Jimmy James owned it, and have a few pregame, warm-up drinks. And so anyway, we all came in the locker room, and there's Slick staring at us, and he's looking kind of funny, and he said, "I want everybody dressed early." So we went, okay. So we all dressed early. I want everybody sitting down in the chair. Okay. Stands up and he looks at all of us and he's kind of weaving around a little bit and he says, "All right, we're not playing as a team. We're not a family. We have to be a family. We have to be a team. We're going to win for family, God, country, da da da." And we're all kind of looking at each other and he looks at us and says, "And," he says, "if we're on the road on a Sunday, we're all going to church together as a team." Okay. And he said, "Starting tonight, we're going to say a pregame prayer." Okay. And he turns around. He kind of staggered, looked at it. He says, "Now, bow your motherfucking heads." And basically, he didn't get the prayer. We felt the guy just fell on the floor. But he was dead serious.
Now, could Bobby Leonard, could this...
have to cut that a little bit off.
Yeah. Now, could this have happened anywhere else but the ABA? Because it strikes me as, like you said, the guy's a ring salesman. He's lit up. He's chasing you with a hockey stick. This is all the stuff that would last 20 seconds.
So what's the picture?
Shall I go ahead and tell him the story?
Well, tell him about the picture.
Slick
is talking in the locker room with a cigarette in one hand and a beer in the other.
Talking to Mel.
Oh, yeah.
That's in my book.
Yeah.
Well, this is a remembrance of the great sports coaching of Bobby Leonard.
Well, I tell a story at some meetings about Slick, and there's actually no dirty words in it. Can you believe it? I tell this kind of story, and it's kind of a joke, but, we played an exhibition game in Kentucky, and it's old Hick Town, and Slick came to me the day before the game. He says, "Hey, Nettle, let's go have a beer." So I says, "Okay." So we found this old Hick bar in this town. We walk in, we sit down, and I had one and two, three, about six, and Slick happens to notice this big glass jar. It's on the bar. He said, "What's that, bartender?" And he looked at it. He said, "What's that in the side there?" He says, "Well, that's $100 bills. Slick says, "How many are there?" He says, "Oh, God, you wouldn't believe how many." Slick says, "Well, what's the deal?" He says, "Well, that's a deal where you can win all those hundreds. All you got to do is the 3 things that are written on this tab on the wall." Slick says, "What is it?" And he says, "Well, can't tell you unless you put your 100 in." So old Slick puts $100 in there. "Let me see, bartender." So the bartender pulls out. He says, "Well, the first thing you have to do, you have to drink this quart of wild turkey.
Whoa.
You have to chug it in 60 seconds. And he says, second thing you got to do, you got to go in the back room. I've got a pit bull back there. It's got a bad tooth. You got to pull that tooth out. And then the third thing you got to do, he says, my 70-year-old grandmother's upstairs, and she hasn't been made love to in about 10 years. You got to really give it to her real good. Slick says, well, you got to be nuts. Give me my money back. The guy says, no, no, no. Once your money's in there, you got to do it. Slick says, well, you're crazy. So we had drank about 5-4 beers, and all of a sudden I hear this noise on the table. Bartender, I'm going to give it a shot. Slick says. So they open the bottle of whiskey, and here he goes. I thought, he's going to die. Okay? And 57 seconds, he gets it down. And I mean, you know, wow. Bartender, where's that back room? So they lead him to the back room, open the door shut. I mean, you could hear the pin drop in the bar. All of a sudden, this howling and screaming and banging and boom, boom, boom. And then it goes quiet for about 5 minutes, just quiet. All of a sudden, the door flies open. There's Slick. He's got hair all, you know, blood, dog bites and blood all over him. He's all torn up. And he looks, and everybody's staring at him. And says, oh, Christ. He staggers up to the bar, slams his fist on the bar, and says, all right, where's that old broad with a bad tooth? See, that's not really true, but it's a good joke. You know what? And it fits.
Yeah, I bet it does.
Did you tell that at his funeral?
Huh?
Did you tell that at his funeral?
Yeah, I told that. I told that they had a roast for Slick at the Old Timers Club, and I told that with a couple other real stories, and he got a few laughs. Some of them believed it, though. That's the sad part.
Well,
and I asked Neto, you know, if he'd talked to, because Slick, how long has Slick been gone? 3 years?
2 years.
Two years. And you talked to Nancy, and she's still kicking around.
I saw her yesterday. Yeah. She's still, because she's 91, and she's still hanging in there. She told me she had 3 strokes. I didn't have the heart to say four is a charm, but, you know, she's a very nice lady, and she's hanging in there. Looks, she put up a Slick for all that. She needs about 6 medals.
So you get drafted. You're playing for the Pacers. Your coach is Bobby Leonard. But you guys become amazingly close through the years. And I had heard that long before I'd met you or talked to Robin Miller. And so I think that's kind of amazing that this guy had a very specific way about him, but it worked well with your relationship.
It's funny how he, you know, today you don't see that, but I mean, you would see Slick wanted us, like, after the games, all of us go in the bar together, all of us have, you know, eat together, let's go drink together, things like that that you just don't see happening today hardly ever. And I mean, it got to the point where, you know, we would go over to Slick's house. So I remember when one of his children were born, we'd go over and celebrate that. We'd go have parties at Slick's house. And I don't think you have that closeness you do today. And then, you know, especially when I had my bar open, everybody would convert, you know, after the game, everybody'd go there, and including Slick, you know, the assistant coaches and everything. And it was just like a bond that I just don't see that in today's game. And it's probably money and, you know, it's just a little more sterile than it used to be.
And it's important that when I was around the two of them, Slick never called him Neto. He always called him Bobby. like he was a son. He always called him Bobby.
He called me Nets once in a while when he was mad. He called me Bobby when he was mad at me.
Tinkham called you 24, and Slick called you Bobby.
But, you know, like I said, Slick was the funny story is, like, when, you know, Mel passed away, and I said, people have no clue. I was telling you about that earlier game that they would have filed bankruptcy. If it hadn't been for Bobby Leonard being here, or if it hadn't been for Mel being here, you take one of those guys, or Roger, one of those guys out of the equation, the Pacers aren't here anymore. And you wonder, would the Colts still be here if they folded? You know, it's a crazy, you know, what if type of thing. But I'm telling you right now, if Bobby Leonard hadn't been our coach,
no, I mean, that's an amazing story.
Kentucky, I'll put it that way.
And as And as you pointed out, you know, early on, an ABA franchise was worth what, in your opinion?
Well, I don't know what it was, you know, later on. But like I said, to get into the league, the franchise fee was $6,000.
And the amazing thing now is, you know, and I only have NFL numbers, but, you know, the average NFL franchise is $1 billion plus. You know, even on the low end, I'm going to guess NBA franchise has to be multiple millions of dollars. So to me, the scale of economy from that is pretty amazing. And as you pointed out, you know, these were all contingent on four or five or six guys going one way or another. So he was in a very important part of this.
There's another story that not many people know about, and some people say it's not true, but it is. Tinkham, when the Pacers were actually going to, they were to the point of being sold to a team out west. It was there, Omaha or somewhere. And that was the year that Sam Nassi ended up owning the team. I don't know if you remember that, but they were out of money, basically, and so they had to sell it. Well, the funny part is people don't know who bought it first. Dr. Jerry Buss owned the Pacers for about a month. He agreed to buy the Pacers, all right? And I guess the deal was done, keep them here, and Tinkham had it done. And then Jerry Buss was at a party with Jack King Cook out in L.A., and he was bragging, you know, I just bought the Pacers, I'm going to be your competitor and everything. And I guess Jack King Cook put his hand on his shoulder and said, damn, I didn't owe you that kind of money. I'll sell you the damn Lakers. And Buss went, you're kidding. So Buss went and got his friend Sam Nassi to take the Pacers off his hands. He bought the Lakers. And that's a crazy story, but
That is a crazy story, yeah.
You know, one thing I've never understood, we're Pacers fans, been Pacers fans for a long time. Why is Freddie and Neto's numbers not retired?
I do not disagree.
Have they ever come to you?
Well, it's a funny story because they sent me and Freddie letters back when they retired Roger Mellon. So they sent us a letter and we were going to retire our number too. And then they sent me another letter back, well, it cost, because of the cost, we're going to wait to retire you guys next year. So, okay. And what they gave Roger was, I think they gave him a $1,500 Rolex back then. That was the big deal. When they retired Freddie, they gave him, what, a Bentley Convertible like that. But it's no big deal. But I agree. It was, you know, I don't know. Just, what can you do?
Absolutely. We are talking about Coach Bobby Slick Leonard with a man that knows him quite well, Bob Nedelecki. Alan Hunter is part of this edition of Firehouse Irvington. And I was always impressed later that Bobby Leonard became a great broadcaster in that he brought so much emotion to the game and realism to the game and obviously a background in basketball. They just recently put Mark Boyle in the Indiana Broadcasters Hall of Fame. And, you know, Mark got the opportunity to work with Bobby Leonard. And, you know, he's got the stories as well. But he confided in me one time that he's just said, there just will never be a guy like Slick. And I think Mark Boyle is one of the consummate professional broadcasters. And he just says there's just nobody like him and there'll never be another guy like him. Absolutely. And then he tragically passed. And then I thought it was great that all the athletes that knew him came out and spoke in such a heartfelt way at his memorial service. So,
yeah, he was something else.
Well,
like Jordan, I were laughing. I said, he's up there now making Mel and Roger run baselines.
Run to your hurl, right? Well, I tell you what.
He would, one time, we had a practice day after New Year's, and he came in, and I saw him looking at us. We were all, you know, everybody's kind of hungry.
Oh, sure.
And he had that look in his eye, and I tell you, I almost died. I mean, he literally, I've never been so close to death. He ran us and ran us and ran us, and he just, like, see, look at his face. He said, did you have a good time last night, guys? Run
us again. I mean, I can remember we were laying in the locker room almost dying, but he he knew when you had a hangover.
Yeah. Yeah, he got the workout in. Well, great remembrance of Bobby Slick Leonard from Bob Nedelecki. Thanks again for joining us, Bob. It's really has been a pleasure, I know. And I think that's your agent. You're finally going to get that big NBA money, I think.
Yeah, Al told me tonight I get, what did you say? I get one hamburger and I
get you
get
paid
back,
exactly
right?
What I'm getting paid.
You could get him a sack of White Castle. It'd be kind of a nostalgia thing, wouldn't
that's
it?
That's right.
Thanks again for joining us. Another great edition of Firehouse Irvington. We couldn't have done this without Dale Harkins and his amazing theater, the Irving Theater. I always chuckle to myself because this was the one great place I used to come to as a kid. Thankfully, we got to see it as a real movie house before it turned into the adult movie house. But then that's part of the lore, Alan, isn't it? And I'm not saying when we were 16 we tried to sneak in. I'm not saying that. But thank you, Dale, for having us out. We'd like to thank Artisan Realtors, Don Briggs, and all the people that help us put together Firehouse Irvington. Alan, thank you for all your research and for being a part of this, because when it comes to nerdish history, there's none finer.
That's me.
We can't get esoteric enough, can we?
That's me.
I'll tell you what, if anybody was at that 50-year reunion we had, ABA, or the 30th, this man right here was a huge part of it. He did things that I couldn't even imagine doing.
Yeah, that
was
fun.
Alan is a force of nature.
Yeah.
I always say with Alan, just let him do what he's going to do, get out of his way. You'll appreciate the results when it's all said and done.
Gonna set my heart at ease. Gonna take a sentimental journey.